24. Juliet entered the airlock to retrieve the samples. She could feel the heat from the earlier fire, or else she was imagining it. It could have been her temperature going up inside the suit, or it may simply have been the sight of that sealed container on the ready bench, its lid now discolored from the lick of flames. She checked the container with the flat of her glove. The material on her palm didn't grow tacky and stick to the metal. It felt cool to the touch. Over an hour of scrubbing down, changing into new suits, cleaning both airlocks, and now there was a box of clues. A box of outside air, of soil and other samples. Clues, perhaps, to all that was wrong with the world. She retrieved the box and joined the others beyond the second airlock. A large lead-lined trunk was waiting, its joints sealed, the interior padded. The welded sample box was nestled inside. After the lid was shut, Nelson added a ring of caulk, and Lucas helped Juliet with her helmet. With it off, she realized how labored her breathing had become. Wearing that suit was starting to get to her. She wiggled out of it while Peter Billings sealed all of the airlocks. His office adjacent to the cafeteria had been a construction site for the past week, and she could tell he would be glad for everyone to be gone. Juliet had promised to remove the inner lock as soon as possible, but that there would most likely be more excursions before that happened. First, she wanted to see about the small pockets of outside air she'd brought into the silo. And it was a long way down to the suit lab on 34. Nelson and Sophia went ahead of them to clear the stairwell. Juliet and Lucas followed after, one hand each on either side of the trunk like porters on a tandem. Another violation of the pact, Juliet thought. People in silver, porting. How many laws could she break now that she was in a position to uphold them all? How clever could she be in justifying her actions? Her thoughts drifted from her many hypocrisies to the dig far below, to the news that Courtney had punched through, that Solo and the kids were safe. She hated that she couldn't be down there with them, but at least her father was. Initially reluctant to play any role in her voyage outside, her father had then resisted leaving her to see to the kids instead. Juliet had convinced him they had taken enough precautions that a checkup of her health was unnecessary. The trunk swayed and banged against the rail with a jarring clang, and she tried to concentrate on the task at hand. "You okay back there?" Lucas called. "How do porters do this?" she asked, switching hands. The weight of the lead-lined trunk pulled down, and its bulk was in the way of her legs. Lucas was lower down and able to walk in the center of the stairway with his arms straight by his side, much more comfortable looking. She couldn't manage anything similar from higher up. At the next landing, she made Lucas wait while she removed the belt threaded through the waist of her coveralls and tied this to the handle, looping it over her shoulder the way she'd seen a porter do. This allowed her to walk to the side, the weight of the box leaning against her hip, just how they'd carried those black bags with bodies to be buried. After a level, it almost grew comfortable, and Juliet could see the appeal of porting. It gave one time to think. The mind grew still while the body moved. But then the thought of black bags and what she and Lucas were porting, and her thoughts found a dark shadow to lie still in. "How are you doing?" she asked Lucas after two turns of complete silence. "Fine," he said. "Just wondering what we're carrying here, you know? What's inside the box?" His mind had found similar shadows. "You think this was a bad idea?" she asked. He didn't answer. It was hard to tell if that was a shrug or if he was adjusting his grip. They passed another landing. Nelson and Sophia had taped the doors off, but faces watched from behind dirty glass. Juliet spotted an elderly woman holding a bright cross against the glass. As she turned, the woman rubbed the cross and kissed it, and Juliet thought of Father Wendell and the idea that she was bringing fear, not hope, to the silo. Hope was what he and the church offered, some place to exist after death. Fear came from the chance that changing the world for the better could possibly make it worse. She waited until they were beneath the landing. "Hey, Luke."
"Yeah?"
"Do you ever wonder what happens to us after we're gone?"
"I know what happens to us," he said. "We get slathered in butter and chewed off the cob."
He laughed at his own joke.
"I'm serious. Do you think our souls join the clouds and find some better place?"
His laughter stopped.
"No," he said after a long pause. "I think we simply stop being."
They descended a turn and passed another landing, another door taped off and sealed as a precaution. Juliet realized their voices were drifting up and down a quiet and empty stairwell.
It doesn't bother me that I won't be around one day, Lucas said after a while. I don't stress about the fact that I wasn't here 100 years ago. I think death will be a lot like that. 100 years from now, my life will be just like it was 100 years ago. Again, he adjusted his grip or shrugged. It was impossible to say. I'll tell you what does last forever. He turned his head to make sure she could hear, and Juliet braced for something corny like, love, or something unfunny like, your casseroles. What lasts forever? She obliged, sure to regret it, but sensing that he was waiting for her to ask. Our decisions, he said. Can we stop a moment? Juliet asked. There was a burn where the strap rubbed across her neck. She set her end down on a step, and Lucas held his half to keep the trunk level. She checked the knot and stepped around to switch shoulders. I'm sorry, our decisions? She had lost him. Lucas turned to face her. Yeah, our actions, you know, they last forever. Whatever we do, it'll always be what we did. There's no taking them back. This wasn't the answer she was expecting. There was sadness in his voice as he said these things, that box resting against his knee, and Juliet was moved by the utter simplicity of his answer. Something resonated, but she wasn't sure what it was. Tell me more, she said. She looped the strap around her other shoulder and readied to lift it again. Lucas held the rail with one hand and seemed content to rest there a moment longer. I mean, the world goes around the sun, right? According to you, she laughed. Well, it does. The legacy and the man from Silo 1 confirm it. Juliet scoffed as if neither could be trusted. Lucas ignored her and continued. That means we don't exist in one place. Instead, everything we do is left in, like a trail out there, a big ring of decisions. Every action we take and mistake. He nodded and dabbed at his forehead with his sleeve. And every mistake, but every good thing we do as well. They are immortal, every single touch we leave behind. Even if nobody sees them or remembers them, that doesn't matter. That trail will always be what happened, what we did, every choice. The past lives on forever. There's no changing it. Makes you not want to fuck up, Juliet said, thinking on all the time she had, wondering if this box between them was one more mistake. She saw images of herself in a great loop of space, fighting with her father, losing a lover, going out to clean, a great spiral of hurts like a journey down the stairs with a bleeding foot. And the stains would never wash out. That's what Lucas was saying. She would always have hurt her father. Was that the way to phrase it? Always have had? It was immortal tense, a new rule of grammar. Always have had gotten friends killed. Always have had a brother die and a mother take her own life. Always have had taken that damn job as sheriff. There was no going back. Apologies weren't welds. They were just an admission that something had been broken, often between two people. You okay? Lucas asked. Ready to go on? But she knew he was asking more than if her arm was tired. He had this ability to spot her secret worries. He had a keen vision that allowed him to glimpse the smallest pinprick of hurt through heavy clouds. I'm fine, she lied. And she searched her past for some noble deed, for a bloodless tread, for any touch on the world that had left it a brighter place. But when she'd been sent to clean, she had refused. Always have had refused. She had turned her back and walked off, and there was no chance of going back and doing it any other way. Nelson was waiting for them in the suit lab. He was already prepped and in his second suit, but with his helmet off. The suit Juliet wore outside and the two used to scrub her down had been left in the airlock. Only the radios installed in the collars had been saved. They were as precious as people, Juliet had joked. Nelson and Sophia had already installed them in this pair of suits. Lucas would have a third radio in the hall. The trunk went on the floor by a cleared workbench. Juliet and Lucas both shook sensation and blood back into their arms. You've got the door? She asked Lucas. He nodded and threw a last frowning glance at the trunk. Juliet could tell he would rather stay and help. He squeezed her arm and kissed her on the cheek before leaving and closing the door. Juliet sat on her cot and squeezed herself into yet another suit and could hear him and Sophia working seal tape around the door. The vents overhead had already been double-bagged, Juliet reckoned there was far less air in the container than she had allowed inside Silo 17, and she had survived that ordeal. But they were still taking every precaution. They were acting as if even one of those containers had enough poison in it to kill everyone in the silo. It was a condition Juliet had insisted upon. Nelson zipped up her back and folded the Velcro flap over, sealing it tight. She tugged on her gloves. Both of their helmets clicked into place. To give them plenty of air in time, she'd pulled an oxygen bottle from the acetylene kit. The flow of air was regulated with a small knob, and the overflow spilled out through a set of double valves. Testing the setup, Juliet had found they could go for days on the trickle of air from the shared tank. "You good?" she asked Nelson, testing the volume on her radio. "Yeah," he said. "Ready." Juliet appreciated the rapport they'd developed, the rhythm of two mechanics on the same shift working the same project night after night. Most of their conversations regarded the project, challenges to overcome, tools to pass back and forth. But she had also learned that Nelson's mother used to work with her father, was a nurse before moving down to the deep to become a doctor. She also learned that Nelson had built the last two cleaning suits, had fitted Holston before cleaning, had just missed being assigned to her. Juliet had decided that this project was as much for his absolution as hers. He had put in long hours that she didn't think she could expect from anyone else. They were both looking to make things right. Selecting a flat driver from the tool rack, she began scraping caulk from around the lid of the trunk. Nelson chose another driver and worked his side. When their efforts met, she checked with him, and they pried the lid open to reveal the metal container from the airlock bench. Lifting this out, they rested it on a cleared work surface. Juliet hesitated. From the walls, a dozen cleaning suits looked down on them in silent disapproval. But they had taken all precautions, even ludicrous ones. The suits they were wearing had been stripped down of all the excess padding, making it easier to work. The gloves as well. Every concession Lucas had asked for, she had provided. It had been like Shirley, with the backup generator in the dig, going so far as to throttle back the main Jenny to reduce the power load, even rigging the tunnel with blast charges in case of contamination, whatever it took to allow the project to move forward. Juliet snapped back to the present as she realized Nelson was waiting on her. She grabbed the lid and hinged it open, pulled out the samples. There were two of air, one control sample of argon from the airlock, one each of surface and deep soil, and one of desiccated human remains. They were each placed on the workbench, and then the metal container was set aside. "Where do you want to start?" Nelson asked. He grabbed a small length of steel pipe with a piece of chalk slotted into the end, an improvised writing device for gloved hands. A blackboard slate stood ready on the bench to take notes. "Let's start with the air samples," she said. It had already been several hours in getting the samples down to the lab. Her private fear was that there'd be nothing left of the gaskets by now, nothing to observe. Juliet checked the labels on the containers and found the one marked 2. It had been taken near the hills. "There's irony here, you know," Nelson said. Juliet took the sample container from him and peered through the clear plastic top.
"What do you mean?"
"It's just..." He turned and checked the clock on the wall and scratched the time onto the slate, glanced back guiltily at Juliet. "Being allowed to do this, to see what's out there, to even talk about it. I mean, I put your suit together. I was lead tech on the sheriff's suit." He frowned behind his clear dome. Juliet could see a shine on his brow. "I remember helping him get dressed." It was his third or fourth awkward attempt at an apology, and Juliet appreciated it.
"You were just doing your job," she assured him.
And then she thought about how powerful that sentiment was, how far down a nasty road that could take a person, shuffling along and simply doing their job. "But the irony is that this room..." He waved a glove at the suits peering down from the walls. "Even my mom thought this room was here to help people, help cleaners survive for as long as possible, help explore the outside world that nobody's supposed to talk about. And finally, here we are, more than talking about it." Juliet didn't say anything, but he was right. It was a room of both hope and dread. "What we yearn to find and what's out there are two different things," she eventually said. "Let's stay focused." Nelson nodded and readied his chalk. Juliet shook the first sample container until the two gaskets inside separated. The durable one from supply was perfectly whole. The yellow marks on the edge were still there. The other gasket was in far worse shape. Its red marks were already gone, the edges eaten away by the air inside the container. The same was true of the two samples of heat tape adhered to the bottom. The square piece from supply was intact. She had cut the one from IT into a triangle in order to tell them apart. It had a small hole eaten through it.
I'd say an eighth gone on the sample two gasket, Juliet said. One hole in the heat tape 3 millimeters across. Both supply samples appear fine.
Nelson wrote her observations down. This was how she had decided to measure the toxicity of the air, by using the seals and heat tape designed to rot out there and compare it to the ones she knew would last. She passed him the container so he could verify and realized that this was their first bit of data. This was confirmation as great as her survival on the outside. The equipment pulled from the cleaning suit storage bays was meant to fail. Juliet felt chills at the momentous nature of this first step. Already her mind raced with all the experiments to perform next, and they hadn't yet opened the containers to see what the air inside was like.
I confirm an eighth of wear on the gasket, Nelson said, peering inside the container. I would go 2.5 mils on the tape.
Mark 2.5, she said.
One way she would change this next time would be to keep their own slates. Her observations might affect his and vice versa. So much to learn. She grabbed the next sample while Nelson scratched his numbers.
Sample one, she said. This one was from the ramp.
Peering inside, she spotted the whole gasket that had to be from supply. The other gasket was half worn. It had nearly pinched all the way through in one place. Tipping the container upside down and rattling it, she was able to get the gasket to rest against the clear lid.
That can't be right, she said. Let's see that lamp.
Nelson swiveled the arm of the worklight toward her. Juliet aimed it upward, bent over the workbench, and twisted her body and head awkwardly to peer past the dilapidated gasket toward the shiny heat tape beyond.
I'd say half wear on the gasket. Holes in the heat tape 6 mils across. I need you to look at this.
Nelson marked down her numbers before taking the sample. He returned the light to his side of the bench. She hadn't expected a huge difference between the two samples. But if one sample was worse, it should be the one from the hills, not the ramp, not where they were pumping out good air.
Maybe I pulled them out in the wrong order, she said.
She grabbed the next sample, the control. She'd been so careful outside. But she did remember her thoughts being scrambled. She had lost count at one point, had held one of the canisters open too long. That's what it was.
I confirm, Nelson said. A lot more wear on these. Are you sure this one was from the ramp?
I think I screwed up. I held one of them open too long. Damn it! We might have to throw those numbers out, at least for any comparison.
That's why we took more than one sample, Nelson said.
He coughed into his helmet, which fogged the dome in front of his face. He cleared his throat.
Don't beat yourself up.
He knew her well enough. Juliet grabbed the control sample, cursing herself under her breath, and wondered what Lucas was thinking out there in the hall, listening in on his radio.
Last one, she said, rattling the container.
Nelson waited, chalk poised above the slate.
Go ahead.
She aimed the light inside. She rattled the container. Sweat trickled down her jaw and dripped from her chin. I thought this was the control, she said.
She set the sample down and grabbed the next container, but it was full of soil. Her heart was pounding, her head spinning. None of this made sense, unless she'd pulled the samples out in the wrong order. Had she screwed it all up?
Yeah, that's the control sample, Nelson said.
They tapped the canister she'd just checked with his length of pipe. It's marked right there.
Give me a sec, she said.
Juliet took a few deep breaths. She peered inside the control sample once again, which had been collected inside the airlock. It should have captured nothing but argon. She handed the container to Nelson.
Yeah, that's not right, he said.
He shook the container.
Something's not right.
Juliet could barely hear. Her mind raced. Nelson peered inside the control sample. He hesitated.
I think maybe a seal fell out when you opened the lid, which is no big deal. These things happen. Or maybe
impossible, she said.
She had been careful. She remembered seeing the seals in there. Nelson cleared his throat and placed the control sample on the workbench. He adjusted the worklight to point directly down into it. Both of them leaned over. Nothing had fallen out, she was sure of it. But then, she had made mistakes. Everyone was capable of them.
There's only one seal in there, Nelson said. I really think maybe it fell.
The heat tape, Juliet said. She adjusted the light. There was a flash from the bottom of the container where a piece of tape was stuck. The other piece was gone.
Are you telling me that an adhered piece of tape fell out as well?
Well, then containers are out of order, he said. We have them backwards. This makes perfect sense if we got them all backwards, because the one from the hill isn't quite as worn as the ramp sample. That's what it is.
Juliet had thought of that, but it was an attempt to match what she thought she knew to what she was seeing. The whole point of going out was to confirm suspicions. What did it mean that she was seeing something completely different? And then it hit her, like a wrench to the skull. It hit her like a great betrayal, a betrayal by a machine that was always good to her, like a trusted pump that suddenly ran backwards for no apparent reason. It hit her like a loved one turning his back while she was falling, like some great bond that wasn't simply taken away, but never truly existed.
Luke, she said, hoping he was listening, that he had his radio on.
She waited. Nelson coughed.
I'm here, he answered, his voice thin and distant. I've been following.
The Argon, Juliet said, watching Nelson through both of their domes. What do we know about it?
Nelson blinked the sweat from his eyes.
Know what? Lucas said. There's a periodic table in there somewhere, inside one of the cabinets, I think.
No, Juliet said, raising her voice so she could be sure he heard.
I mean, where does it come from? Are we even sure what it is?